Welcome to What the Fantasy. I am Brandon Hay at HeyB3, and I'm missing my co-host Zara tonight. He's just taking the night off, but we have a great guest in Colin Decker. Find him on Twitter at C2CDecker. He's very underfollowed on there, and he also worked with me at Campus the Canton. And today, he with Austin Ace, he does Campus Life and Canton Bound. So, Colin, thanks for joining.
Thanks for having me on, man. Like I said, definitely big shoes to fill on here. You know, UNZ have been killing it week in, week out. This is one of my can't miss shows. So I'm excited to be on here, man.
Yeah, I know. You got all the shows going on at Campus of Canton. Is there any other special things you got going on right now, or just keep on chugging through this football season?
Just got to keep on chugging through the season, man. Pretty much everything I do is over at campustocanton.com. One of the founders over there. So that's where all my written work is. My pods are through there. Rankings, anything like that, that's where you can find all that stuff. I don't tweet out a whole lot on Twitter, but, you know, DMs are always open. I love chatting it up in there.
Yes, you are a great person to, like, chat with. I know I just started in CTC leagues, and for probably most of our listening audience, for just Dynasty and Redraft, that's it has a college side along with the NFL side. You run, the college side, and you get scores there, and then the players automatically go to your NFL rosters. I would definitely say, if you're interested, kind of check it out. I started this year, and Colin's always happy to help me with any of my trade questions at any time of the night. So,
for sure.
So let's go ahead and get started. Just some things that have been happening in the league. First, I want to talk about Justin Herbert. He is quarterback 7 for the year, but 3 out of the last 4 games have been under 16 fantasy points. And those games were against the Vikings, the Patriots, and the Ravens. I think the only one I would really say has a good defense is the Patriots. The other two can play good defense. So how do you feel about Justin Herbert the rest of the season? Is this just kind of blip on the radar, or is this something that people should be kind of worried about the rest of the year?
Like you touched on, definitely not a murderer's row of defenses there. They're pretty middle of the pack. So I don't know how much you could take away from the opponents that he faced. I think the biggest thing there is, he hasn't really had the rushing production this year. He's had a little bit more of it last year. A lot of his numbers were buoyed by the rushing touchdown. So he had to deal a lot with his arm this year. I think that QB7 is pretty safe for him. I'm not too worried about him down the stretch. There's not too many QBs who are more reliable than him. He may not have the ceiling of a Lamar or Patrick Mahomes or Josh Allen, but he's just been very consistent all year here. So I'm not really too worried about him.
No, I tend to agree. I think the only thing is he had some, 30 and I think a 35 point game early in the season. So you're not going to see those consistently like with the top 5 quarterbacks. So I think some, including myself, thought that he might kind of have that ceiling at the beginning of the year. But the offense and the Chargers have kind of fallen off a little bit. I think they've been hurt with Mike Williams going through some injuries. They don't have that second really receiver. With a new coach, they're still trying to find themselves. So I think he's still a very good quarterback. Fine the rest of the way. Just you have to temper your expectations. Kind of like you're saying, he's going to be a top 10 quarterback. May give you games here or there where he can finish in the top 3. But if you're truly expecting him to carry your team like a Lamar Jackson, a Mahomes, or Josh Allen, I don't know if he'll be able to do that. So next we'll go into some of these rookie receivers. Obviously, Ja'Marr Chase is, the top rookie receiver. But a lot of these, at Campus Canton, we kind of talked about in the offseason. So I wanted to get your opinion on which of these rookie wide receivers you would want the rest of the year. Jalen Waddle, Devonta Smith, Elijah Moore, or Rashad Bateman?
I mean, it's definitely Jalen Waddle for me. Jalen Waddle was my wide receiver 1 coming into this class. I did have him ahead of Chase. Now, I have since moved Chase ahead. Chase has answered any questions that I've had. He has looked phenomenal this year. There's a reason he's not listed in this group, because he separated himself. But I like Waddle's talent a lot. I think the Tyreek Hill comps are the obvious ones. They're very easy. They're kind of everybody wants the next Tyreek Hill. I don't know if we'll ever get one, but I think Jaylen Waddle can be very close. And he's starting to really come alive here the past couple weeks. He had 29 points against Jacksonville in full PPR, 15 the next week. Bit of a down week against Buffalo. After that, 6.9 points. But he's Buffalo's defense is good. You know, then 16 points, 10 points last week. And then the schedule is pretty soft the rest of the way, too. He gets the Jets twice, Carolina, the Giants. You know, so it's a fairly nice schedule down the stretch for him. So when you combine that with his talent and him starting to come on here of late, it's definitely Waddle for me.
I definitely like Jaylen Waddle a lot. How much does it concern you, the quarterback situation in Miami, how it's just really weird how they're kind of putting Tua in weird situations? And that's the only part I kind of worry. And it seems like sometimes they know how to use Waddle and get him down the field, and sometimes they just throw him all those short passes, which are good, you know, around in the red zone. But that's my only really worry for Waddle. It has nothing to do with the talent.
Yeah, you got to be a little bit concerned with the quarterback situation going on there. I mean, as far as actual quarterback talent goes, I still believe in Tua. I liked Tua a lot coming out. You know, last year should have been kind of a redshirt year coming off of that really bad hip dislocation. And they kind of threw him out there. They were yo-yoing him back and forth. And they're doing the exact same thing this year. It's not a good thing for his confidence. Jacoby Brissett, though, is not it. And he's shown that multiple times. I mean, say what you want about Tua, about what you think his future is. But he's been putting up solid stat lines fantasy-wise the past couple weeks there. You know, so if they just stick with Tua and give him a chance, I think Waddle could be one of the league winners down the stretch, to be honest with you. But the QB situation does worry me a little bit, only because the way the coaching staff's handling it.
No, I agree. And I think they could have a couple more wins with Tua. The game against Jacksonville, it wasn't really necessarily his. He was the reason they lost that. And then he brought them back against, I believe it was the Falcons the next week. And then the Falcons came back and scored a field goal to win that game. So I like Waddle. So mine really came down to two players, Devonta Smith and Rashad Bateman. I like Bateman a lot, but for some reason the Ravens continually want to roll Sammy Watkins out there. And last week, Bateman really didn't get the targets until the end of the game. Fantasy-wise, you know, it turns out okay. He ended up in double digits, but he just needs to get the ball more. And it seems like with Devonta Smith, they're finally figuring out in Philly how to get him the ball. And I just think they don't really have much receiving options outside of him. So I think he might perform the best the rest of the season. But out of the four long-term, I probably want him the least out of the others. But I'm going with Devonta Smith, which I didn't think I would say at the beginning of the year. But he's really started to come on. And, you know, Philly, I'm not really sold on Hurts or Philadelphia or Sirianni. But he has had a couple of good games back to back, so I think he could start to get it going for the rest of the season.
Yeah, I agree with you there. I think Smith is going to be good down the stretch there as well. I think that I have the same questions you do with Jalen Hurts as far as his actual ability to play the quarterback position, you know, for long term. But we don't really care about that for the rest of this year, and they're going to have some garbage time. Hurts has been producing. And they don't have anybody else to really give the ball to. You know, they got rid of Zach Ertz a couple weeks ago. They traded him away. So that was one of Hurts' safety blankets. They still have Goddard there. He's just been okay, really. And then the other receivers they have don't really inspire a lot of confidence there. I mean, they're trotting out Quez Watkins. You know, I think he was like a fifth round pick, something like that. So they don't have a great stable of receivers. They invested highly in Devonta Smith this offseason. It took him a little bit of time to come on. I mean, he blew up week one against the Falcons, but who doesn't, you know? but yeah, he took him a little bit to come on after that, but it seems like the lights come on. They're trusting him more, and they're feeding him the ball.
No, I agree. And as of now, I just do not believe in Jalen Reagor. I have him. I made a big mistake last year. I took him over in rookie drafts over, you know, the likes of Justin Jefferson. I just thought I went based on, you know, opportunity because the Eagles didn't have receivers. And he just seems kind of like, you know, a gadget guy now with them. And until further notice, I can't even play him. So I agree with that. So we'll move on from that and talk about another rookie, Ramondre Stevenson for the Patriots. He's really kind of come on. Damian Harris missed last game, and he had a huge game. And when they totally destroyed the Browns, hit over 100 yards and 2 touchdowns. I wanted to get your opinion on, is he the lead back now, or is this just the normal Patriots, you know, thing with running backs with Belichick, that it's going to be a different guy every week?
Yeah, I think he has definitely, based on his performance last week, earned a little bit more of a role. But when Harris is back, I think Harris is still going to be the lead back there. It's probably going to be a 1-2 role, I would think. Ramondre Stevenson got 55% of the snaps last week. That was by far his most on the season. The week before that, he had had 27% of the snaps. I think you're going to see that 27 grow into, you know, the mid-30s range, maybe even up into like the 40, low 40s. So he's going to get some more work, but I still think this is going to be Harris's backfield.
I tend to agree, but I think I would still like Stevenson over Harris, just because Stevenson got, I think, he's gotten like 3 receptions the last couple games, something that for some reason Harris just, they do not throw the ball to him. And I do wonder when they get to the goal line if Stevenson will be the back more with that. And, you know, I've still yet to see what they want to do with Brandon Bolden. You know, it seems like when someone's hurt, they like to throw Brandon Bolden out there. But when everyone's healthy, they, you know, he can be, you know, a healthy scratch. So it'll be interesting how they do that. But yeah, I tend to agree. I think both bats are going to be, I mean, they're usable, you know, running back twos, you know, flex plays. But I think the ceiling is very limited as long as Damian Harris comes back.
Yeah, I mean, like you said, Stevenson has been getting more of the passing game work than Harris has, like, throughout the year. I mean, even before this past week where he had 5 targets, you know, the weeks before that he had 2, 2, 3. So he's been getting some steady pass game volume. And he definitely had the size to be used at the goal line there. So it'll be interesting to see whether they go Stevenson or Harris at the goal line, because that's kind of what's really going to separate the value in the role. You know, we want the one that's going to score the touchdowns, because I think Harris will get more carries. Stevenson will get some carries. He'll get some more receptions. So who's going to score? That's where it's going to be very interesting. I still think they'll go with Harris at the goal line, but I don't think either of them's a bad option. I mean, this week against Atlanta is going to be a big week to watch for that.
Yeah, since you're speaking of that, Atlanta obviously had a very bad game last week, and they've been kind of a weird team. And, you know, I know you're a Falcons fan, begrudgingly, but they just seem they have some very good weeks where they compete, you know, and get some wins. I believe they're maybe 4-5 now or something like that, around 500. But then they have games like that last week. Do you think they've bounced back against the Patriots this week, or it's another slaughter for them?
Well, it's hard to play worse than they did last week. I mean, that was embarrassing. You know, when the Falcons Twitter is trolling themselves with 28-3 memes, it's not a good day. It's not a good day. So it's hard to get worse than last week. I do think they are going to bounce back. I mean, we've seen the Patriots really blow up here the last 2 weeks, and they're going to be coming off of that high. But the Falcons, like you said, they run really hot and really cold. It's probably one of their hot weeks, I would think. I don't feel great about that, though, if I'm being honest. But it is in Atlanta. They do tend to play a little bit better at home. I don't think they're going to get slaughtered. I don't know what the line is, but I would not bet it.
Fair enough. So now we'll move into 3 players that we think will have a huge end to the season. So we'll just go back and forth. I'll go first. The first player is Rashad Bateman with the Ravens, a player I've talked about. I have a ridiculous amount of Rashad Bateman pretty much in all rookie drafts this past year. If I had a pick near the end of the first or early second, I would always go with Bateman. And then other people would reach for running backs, say Trey Sermon or even Michael Carter. So I have a lot of him. And so when he got hurt early in the season, that was a real bummer. But he came back and he's looked good. I just got to imagine they start seeing that he's better than Sammy Watkins, that they need to get him the ball more. And Lamar needs a guy that, you know, he can be inaccurate with, and he's going to stretch out and make those tough catches. So I just think he's going to start getting near the end zone and getting some of those touchdowns. So he's the first one that I think is going to have a huge end of the season. And in a lot of, especially redraft leagues, you could probably still get him off of waivers.
Yeah, especially in redraft leagues. I think that you could absolutely get him off waivers. I mean, we kind of want him to replace Sammy Watkins definitely sooner rather than later. I mean, Sammy Watkins isn't it. He's been teasing us for years and years now at this point. So we know what he is, and we know he's not it. So it's time to give Bateman some run. My first guy here is a guy we talked about a little bit earlier, and that's Jaylen Waddle. I really think he's going to blow up here down the stretch. Like I said, they've been starting to use him more. He's been starting to put some solid games back-to-back here. And their schedule is very, very soft. Like I said, they get the Jets twice. The Jets are the second worst pass defense in terms of opponents' yards per game on the season. But the Dolphins also get Tennessee and New Orleans, who are solid teams, but their pass defenses are also fairly bad. I mean, they are Tennessee's 27th and New Orleans is 26th in terms of yards allowed per game. They're the two of the worst teams there. So the game script's going to be there. And I, like I said, I believe in Tua. If they can just give Tua a chance, I think he and Waddle can really make a connection. I think Jaylen Waddle can be a league winner down the stretch here, especially in redraft leagues where you can probably another guy you could find on the waiver wire.
Definitely, that's a good call. And with Devontae Parker, I believe they placed him on IR. I don't know if that's a yes. Short IR or the but yeah, there's definitely a need for him, and it just doesn't seem like Gesicki can really get solid production week to week. So it seems like Waddle is definitely a guy they're looking at. So the second guy I have is Justin Fields. I really like Justin Fields coming into this year. I said before the year that I thought the Broncos and the Panthers would regret not picking him. And I think that's kind of come true because they're both lacking in the quarterback position. I think we saw a little bit with Fields, what he could do when Nagy missed that game against the 49ers. Where he did a lot of running and showed a lot of it, a lot of skills throwing the ball. And then we saw his toughness, even when Nagy was back against the Steelers, driving the team back. I think, you know, the game's starting to slow down a little bit for him. He's finally starting to, you know, connect with A-Rob a little bit. And I think him and Darnell Mooney are just going to be, you know, a poor man's Russell Wilson and Tyler Lockett. They have same type of, you know, kind of connection, that deep pass, you know, where they just seem to find each other. So I think Justin Fields could be, you know, a low-end quarterback that you got, but that could help you, you know, win leagues. That's kind of what my strategy in redraft was this year. Get a quarterback one. I think one league I have Josh Allen. Then I got Fields and then got a player like Tua, which didn't help that he got hurt. But the idea was, you know, play that second quarterback in a super flex until Fields kind of gets running. And I think we're going to start seeing that. So Fields is the second player for me to have a huge rest of the season.
Man, I certainly hope so, because I followed the same strategy you did. I took, you know, a quarterback in the middle rounds there. I ended up with Tom Brady in a couple places. I have a Dak Prescott or two. But at towards the end of the draft, I was stashing Fields in a lot of places because I think he has league-winning upside. If they ever unleash him as a runner and let him do what he can do, I don't know if they're going to do that just based on what Nagy has done so far this year. But, man, if they do, he could be a QB1 towards the end of the year here if they can let him do that. But even if they don't let him run, I do like him down the stretch as well. My second guy, though, is a guy who just came back from injury here. George Kittle came back from injury, and he's already been lighting it up here. Went 6 for 101 and a touchdown in his first game back, 5 for 50 and a touchdown the week after that. And then he has a soft schedule down the stretch here as well. He gets Jacksonville, soft defense, Minnesota. We talked about they're pretty middle of the pack, but then he gets Seattle, Cincy, Atlanta, Tennessee, another team that – not a great pass defense. Houston, that's a soft, soft schedule. And then we get the Rams, but that's week 18. You know, your season's probably wrapped up by that point. So the weeks 11 through 17 are some very soft matchups. I think he's another guy who could have a massive stretch run.
Yeah, definitely. I think, you know, I have him in the league. I'm glad to see him back. So yeah, it kind of looks like it'll be Kittle and Debo Samuel, kind of the 1-2 punch. Because Brandon Ayuk just hasn't been consistent with the 49ers for one reason or the other. So my last one is that I have, this is, might be a little bit of a stretch, but it's DJ Moore. He got a lot of targets early in the season when Sam Darnold looked like, you know, Darnold might be turning the corner, and then he turned back into a pumpkin. And, you know, he's injured now, and it, you know, Cam Newton didn't start the last game, but I think it's just a matter of time that Cam starts. And, you know, when he was in Carolina before, he would throw the ball to DJ Moore quite a bit. And I think that could happen again, get a lot of targets there, because Terrace Marshall has just really not shown up there. And, you know, Robbie Anderson is good, but I just think DJ Moore is just so talented, and they will have to start using him more, because they probably don't want to give the ball to Christian McCaffrey nearly as much since he's broken down the last couple seasons. And I would think they want to try to, you know, maybe sneak into the playoffs this year. So that's my third player I see having a huge end of the season.
Yeah, another guy that I have in a couple places here, and started out hot here. I think, you know, really going to come down to the quarterback play there for DJ Moore. But if he can get consistent play, I think he's a great guy down the stretch too. My last guy is Josh Jacobs. He came back from injury here and, you know, walked into a situation that was completely different than when he left. You know, Gruden wasn't there anymore. He's been getting, you know, a solid share of the snaps. He had 57% last week, and Drake saw the reduction in his snaps the week after that, you know, 31% of the snaps last week. But one of the other things that is a little bit more notable here is that since Gruden has been gone, Jacobs' pass game work has been a little bit more consistent. He had 4 receptions, 5 receptions the past 2 weeks. You know, before that, it kind of yo-yoed all around a little bit here. You know, he had 1 target, or 1 reception, 1 reception, 3 receptions, 4. So it yo-yoed back and forth. So if he can get a steady amount of the passing work here down the stretch, I think he could have a big run here as well. His finishing schedule it's not great. It's also not daunting. It's pretty middle of the pack.
Okay, yeah, I agree. And now we'll get to the fun part of the show, where we talk about our top 3 concerts. And before the show, we kind of talked, there's going to be so a little bit more story time with this. So I'll start with the number 3 for me. Concert, it happened at the Jaguar Stadium this year. It was actually a few months ago. It's one of the first concerts I've been to since, you know, COVID and everything broke out. It was Weezer, Fall Out Boy, and Green Day. A lot of bands, you know, in our college days that we really liked. And one of the biggest stories is for people that don't have it come to Jacksonville, the downtown area around the stadium is horrible. There's one brewery / bar close, and it gets packed. And then everything else is, you know, not really great location. So we did go to this one bar. We walk in, find out that there's one bartender for like 80 people. So she's like running food. She's trying to do drinks and everything like that. So it didn't start out great. And we have a friend that works for the JAG, so he always gets us like kind of club seat access and everything. So that was nice. But it was a really fun concert. I was telling Colin before, a couple of my friends kind of ghosted. One actually told us he was going to leave. Then the other friend that left was constantly berating that friend for leaving. And then he ghosted us like not even 5 minutes later. So it was a fun time, but it showed that, you know, everyone's getting older, so they can't hang as long as we used to. So that's my number 3.
Yeah, I feel that. I can't hang as long as I used to either. But man, for that concert, like, I would have made an exception. Like, I would have been out there the whole time. I love Fall Out Boy. They're one of my favorite bands, especially early Fall Out Boy from Under the Cork Tree. One of my favorite albums of all time. One of my other favorite albums of all time is American Idiot, Green Day. So I love that concert. I wish I could have been there. I'll start with number 3 for me. This was my senior year of high school. I saw Nelly at Bucknell University, which is, you know, 10 minutes down the road from where I grew up. They also had another good band there called Time Flies. It was the first time I'd ever heard of them. They're pretty under the radar, but I really like their stuff. The lead singer does a cool thing where he passes out a hat, and there's a slip of paper in there and you write down something theme related, he'll give you a theme and you write down something on there, and then he'll make up a rap off the top of his head based on whatever he pulls out of the hat. It's pretty cool. But then Nelly, you know, that was some peak Nelly time, you know?
That sounds fun. Yeah. So my second one is in Orlando, and it was Coolio, but this was well past Coolio's prime. I think it was like 8 years ago, but that's still well past Coolio's prime. So I went to a school in Orlando at UCF. I had already moved back to Jacksonville, but people from Jacksonville decided to go to Orlando for St. Patrick's Day, and there's a huge block party. So me on the way, just so you know, this first part of the story has very little to do with the concert, but I feel like it's needed to understand the whole scenario. So we're driving down, and we both decide that's a good idea to drink a bottle of Crown just between two people, on the way from Jacksonville to Orlando. Yes. So we get there, and then, we see a lot of old college friends. They're buying us like car bombs and everything, and everything goes crazy. Everyone is just hammered and everything. I have to call one of my friends to come bring me a shirt. I'm hiding behind a truck because I had too many car bombs and, got some stuff on my shirt. So it was a whole thing. But anyway, so the next day we all wake up, we're all pretty hungover and everything. And then one of my friends, he kept on talking about this Coolio concert, and like no one really wanted to go, only a couple people wanted to go. So it kind of started with this train thing where someone was like, well, if Zach goes, then I'll go. But then Zach was like, if Mike goes, then, I'll go. And then Mike was like, well, Brandon goes. So somehow everyone decided, we all would go. And we ended up at the concert, and it was an amazing time. Coolio was awesome. And let me tell you, Coolio, even past his prime, was just pointing at girls in the crowd, like young college girls. And his like manager would just bring him to the back. It was an amazing concert, and it was so much fun.
Yeah, I mean, the world of being a rock star, right? my second one there is my freshman year of college. So year after the Nelly concert, I saw Sammy Adams. He actually came to my college to play. For anybody who doesn't know where I went to college, which I'm assuming is most people, it's called Lebanon Valley College. We have about 14 to 1500 undergrad students. So there's high schools bigger than my college. It was incredible that we pulled Sammy Adams. I have no idea how that happened. It was right at peak of All Night Longer too. That's, his most popular song there. So freshman year of college too, you're having fun. You're enjoying yourself there. So that was an incredible concert. Got to see with a lot of my college friends there. So that was definitely number two for me.
And number one for me, it's probably the band OAR just in general, because I think I've seen them five or six times, in concert. Every time they're either in Jacksonville or St. Augustine, which is very close by. But in St. Augustine, they have this amphitheater. It's so far away, but it's a really cool place to go. So we usually, get an Uber or anything. And this very much like the Coolio concert, there's four of us this time, and we decided that we're going to drink straight from a Fireball bottle. And we ended up finishing the bottle, which it turned out it was only three of us because one of my other friends would only take baby sips. So the rest of us were. So finished, and pretty much most of us don't remember much of it. The only thing I really recall was when their cards thrown around for people that listen to OAR. There's the Crazy Game of Poker song. So that was happening. And then luckily, so I think we gave our Uber driver one of our numbers, and he waited for us and picked us up after the concert. So we were able to get back home because it was all just a big blur. There's a heat at the St. Augustine Amphitheater. You can buy tickets that are just like standing room. It's kind of like a big like area that people can mosh pit if they want, just all that stuff. So it was a crazy time there. So that's my number one concert.
Yeah, I like OAR too. I've never seen them in concert. They came to Bucknell 1 year when I was, I remember if it was like, it was right around the time of when I was getting to college. So I don't know if it was like the year after Nelly or the year before that, but I like OAR. This Town, that's my favorite song by them.
Oh, I love playing that. That's kind of like when I'm trying to get pumped up, I always play that song.
Yep. Yeah, I love that one. So my number one is I saw B.O.B. and Macklemore in Cancun. So a little backstory on that one. The company that I used to work for when I was living in Philly, called Power Home Remodeling, they're very, very young, very millennial focused. You know, they have pool tables and foosball tables and everything like that in the office. And their biggest perk that they do is if, as long as you hit the sales goals as a company throughout the year, they take everybody on an all expenses paid trip to Cancun. And the resort that they take you to is insane. This is the nicest resort I've ever stayed at. The only thing you had to pay for was the flight, and they get these huge concerts. They get these big name people there. Now, I was only there for 3 years at this company. One of the years was COVID year here, but the first year that I went, they had B.O.B. and Macklemore. It was insane because the drinks were flowing. That was all free. They had people walking around with those, you know, waiters walking around with drinks. They had coolers set up. You could get that anywhere you wanted. So that was just an incredible experience. And then to see two, you know, acts like that, it was incredible.
No, that's sad. Those two are probably like perfect for that kind of like atmosphere too.
For sure. Absolutely.
So that's awesome. So we'll just finish up today's show since we have Colin on. I want to, you know, do a little college talk. We'll do a way too early 2022 rookie mock draft. Do PPR, tight end premium, even though I don't know if that matters. I don't think there's really a tight end that's going to do that right now. Super flex. So we'll just kind of go back and forth. We'll do 12 picks, and then I'll post those later on Twitter after the show. So, Colin, I will let you go first since your Nittany Lions lost to my Michigan Wolverines this past week. I couldn't get the whole show without saying it.
I was waiting for that. I was waiting for that to come up. I almost didn't agree to do the show because I knew it was going to come up at some point. But, you know, the only reason I'm here is that free case of beer you offered me. For anybody who doesn't know, if you come on for a guest, Brandon gives you a free case of beer. It's Bud Light Lime, so it's not great, but, you know, it's free beer.
It's refreshing. It's refreshing.
No, they're very gracious of you to let me go first. See, I got to be honest. This is not the year to have the 1-1 for me. I don't think there's a clear-cut option here at any position at the number one. We still have some evaluation to do here, but I don't feel comfortable taking any of these quarterbacks. I like the receivers, but they're all very tight knit together. Then we got the two running backs, Hall and Spiller. If you twist my arm here, I'm going to take Spiller at the 1-1 right now. I think positional value at the running back is definitely important. I don't know that any of these wide receivers have the ceiling that a Jamar Chase had. Maybe Burks, you know, has the type of ceiling that, you know, we could see from a Chase, we could see from a Waddle. But I don't think that they're a great value at the one. So I'm going to take Spiller. I like his size adjusted athleticism just a little bit more than Hall. That's kind of what bumps him ahead of me right now. So yeah, I'll take Spiller at one.
Yeah, all great points. And I think because usually in super flex leagues, you know, on the rookie draft, always quarterbacks go right off the board. But I think this might be 1 year where it doesn't, just because, I mean, this is still so early in evaluation. This is why I said way too early. But yeah, I think that's a key point, because there's flaws in all these quarterbacks. No one's really, you know, gone to the top. We even have, Pickett kind of people, you know, mentioning it, you know, going up there, which I still don't think happens. But, you know, that just shows that the class really doesn't have someone at the top. And I wanted to ask you real quick about Spiller. Is there any worries? Because in some games, he just has not, you know, really produced. Like this past game against Ole Miss, he only had 40 some yards, and Devin Achane had over 100. And it seems like sometimes Spiller, when they really focus on the running game, he has trouble breaking through that line of defense and doesn't really break tackles at the rate that you would really want. Is that any of worry for you?
So I don't think Spiller has an RB1 ceiling. If he does, it's a back end RB1. I don't love this class as a whole. So I do have some worries about Spiller. That is one of them. I think he's okay physically, you know, in terms of, you know, lowering his shoulder, taking on a tackle, picking up a couple yards here. He does prefer to, you know, try to sidestep some tacklers and change the angles on them. That's a little bit more how he operates. I like his passing game usage, though. It's been very consistent all year. And Devin Achain is the lightning to his thunder. Devin Achain is an all SEC track sprinter. He, this past year, last spring, into like the winter track season, he was, I'm pretty sure he was very close to breaking the SEC record for the 50-yard sprint. So he's very fast. You know, when he gets an ounce of daylight, he's gone. So those stat lines for him, you know, it's 1 yard, 2 yard, 3 yards, 10 yards, 15 yards. He breaks off these massive runs. So that's what you see, you know, that shows up in the box score at times. Spiller, I like his size adjusted athleticism, but he doesn't really have the speed to consistently break those huge runs. He's more of, you know, 5, 6, 7, 8 yards kind of a guy. You know, and then he brings the added value with his pass catching ability.
No, definitely. I agree with all those points. So I'm actually really happy that you picked Spiller, because I've always been a Breece Hall guy over Spiller. I just really like Breece Hall. And, you know, there's two views on it. You know, Iowa State obviously does not have the athletes and the talent that Texas A&M does. So they do have to rely on Breece more. So that's one thing. Whereas, you know, at Texas A&M, they kind of spread it out, you know, with him and the Chang. But then the other side of it is, really, there's no one else there at Iowa State. You know, Purdy consistently shows that he's not a great passer, but, you know, but Hall continues to get the yards and have, you know, has had three straight good years. And I think, you know, he's going to be really good. I know this past year people have kind of been down on him a little bit. Kind of what you're saying about Spiller not being the top end type running back one, probably, you know, closer to the back end. But when you think about it, I mean, you know, mostly you have to start two running backs anyway. And if you can get a back end running back one, a top, you know, end running back two, that's still very valuable. So give me Breece Hall at that spot.
Yeah, I like Hall a lot too. I mean, it really, I think Hall and Spiller are similar players. Like I said, I think the size adjusted athleticism for Spiller gives him a slight edge over Hall, but those are two guys who've been going back and forth in my rankings at 1 and 2 for the class of 2022 RBs all season. So I think Hall's definitely a worthwhile pick there. It just goes back to what I mentioned earlier. This is just not the year to have an early first. You know, if I have an early first, I'm looking to move back and pick up some extra value, because there's not a lot that separates these guys.
No, I agree.
At the 1-3, I will take Matt Corral here. And Matt Corral is not my QB1 right now in this class. Sam Howell is the QB1 in this class for me. But Sam Howell is – I like the Baker Mayfield comps for him. You know, he's showed a lot more rushing ability this year than we've seen in the past. So I'm going to have to really dive in and look into that rushing, but I don't think that's something that's going to be sustainable necessarily at the next level. It's been a lot of design stuff, and he also does not know how to get down. Now, neither does Corral. Both of these guys need to learn how to get down so they don't take these hits at the NFL level, because both of these guys have been banged up throughout the year. But the difference between Corral and Howell for me right now is Corral has a higher ceiling. He just has a bigger arm. He's got better tools. He operates a little bit better outside of structure. And I just see a higher ceiling for him than I do Howell. I think Howell's going to be a very consistent, you know, quarterback one, probably more the high end QB2 range for many years for your team. And that's valuable. You know, don't let Matt Bruning hear me say that, but that can be valuable for your team. But I think this early, I'm probably going to take a swing on Corral and that ceiling.
Yet again, you really made me happy with your pick, because I also like how better than Corral, but I do agree with a lot of what you're saying. I think Corral is more, he does run also, but he's more of the speedier kind of slashing, where Hal wants to run over people, which I love that toughness, but we've seen it gets him hurt. And he cannot do that in the NFL. And I think I would like to see Hal in a system in the NFL, because I think the North Carolina line has been bad this year. And there have been people that said that their scheme isn't really looked fondly on by the NFL. And Corral, I think, has been helped with the Lane Kiffin offense. Not to say that he can't do that in the NFL, but it'll be interesting too how both of those translate. But yeah, I still like Hal a lot. I see some of the throws he makes and, you know, the toughness and everything, because really, you know, he has Josh Downs and not much else on that offense. So, but I would be happy to get Hal at that spot. So, yeah, I'll go with Hal.
Yeah, I would absolutely be happy with that too. It was not an easy decision for me to go Corral over Hal. So I said, Hal is my QB1 ahead of Corral. But another thing with Corral is I do think I think they're both likely to go top 15. I just think the NFL is going to like what Corral brings tools wise, just a little bit more. But you're right. Absolutely right with the scheme there with Kiffin. I definitely think that's helped Corral. So he is going to need a little bit of help at the next level. Whereas I think Howell definitely has it between the ears. He's a very smart passer. He's a very smart player. So I think that he's probably a little bit more scheme versatile. At the 1-5 here, I will take my wide receiver one. I'll take Treylon Burks here. Treylon Burks is just the guy that I think has the highest ceiling out of all these wide receivers. And that's kind of been the theme here in this draft for me right now, is I'm taking the guy who has the highest ceiling just because it is still pretty early. I still have to finish some evaluations here. We don't know landing spots. So with all of that in mind, I'm going to take the guy that I think has potential to be a wide receiver one, and that's Treylon Burks. His athleticism, his size, he checks a lot of boxes. He's still a little bit raw at the position as a route runner, but he's a threat to score anytime he touches the ball. They give him the ball. Arkansas gives him the ball in a variety of ways, so he's a versatile player as well. I like some of these other receivers in this class, but I think these other receivers in this class are going to be wide receiver twos for most of their career, so they're probably a little bit safer than Burks. But again, give me that ceiling.
No, that's a good pick. I was actually between Howell and Burks at 4, but I kind of see a drop off after Corral and Howell for me. So at 6, this is a tough one too. And since I'm kind of basing this mock draft kind of on the thought that, you know, each pick is a different team, so right, it's not like just our teams. So, you know, I've been vocal on how I think Malik Willis has a lot of high ceiling. He has some tools. You see glimpses of it, but I think he has a long way to go. And we've seen, you know, against Ole Miss and Syracuse and even some other teams. And I think a team's going to have to build an offense around him like the Ravens have done with Lamar Jackson and not throw him right in there. But if he gets run one draft capital, you know, I think you have to pick him, you know, this high, because just the ceiling. And if he gets picked in the first round, he's going to have a longer leash with an NFL team. So that's why I'm going with Willis here. Obviously, more evaluation needs to happen, you know, and it just talks to the quarterback class is just not nearly as high. But, you know, quarterbacks are so important in super flex leagues.
Yeah, Malik Willis definitely has the highest ceiling of any player in this draft class, and that's because of what he brings with his legs. We've seen it for the past 2 years. He's phenomenal with his legs. He's one of, if not the best, running quarterback we've seen since Lamar Jackson. I just don't think he has it as a passer. I mean, he has the tools. He has a huge arm, but a lot of his reads are half-field reads, and you see it when he plays any Power 5 competition, really. He wilts. You know, he really, really struggles against any semblance of a half decent defense. So I think he goes the way of a Jalen Hurts, to be honest with you. I think, you know, he burns bright, he burns hot for 2 or 3 years, and then a team realizes he's not a quarterback that you can win with. And I think he probably just, you know, like I said, goes the way of Jalen Hurts. Like, we're expecting somebody to take Hurts' job here in the next year or two. So I think that's probably the future that I see for Malik Willis. But for those 2 or 3 years, I mean, man, he's going to have some good years, fantasy-wise. My next pick is what, the 1-7, right?
Right.
I'm going to take David Bell here. David Bell is my wide receiver 2. David Bell, wide receiver out of Purdue.
You're breaking my heart. I thought for sure I could get him later.
Not in a draft with me, you can. I had David Bell as my wide receiver 1 for a while. Burks did jump him, but it's pretty narrow. I like David Bell. He doesn't have that athleticism that, you know, you like to see out of some of these top end prospects, but at the same time, you don't necessarily have to be an elite athlete at the wide receiver position to be a wide receiver 1. I mean, we're seeing it out of guys like Keenan Allen. We're seeing it out of guys like Devontae Adams, DeAndre Hopkins. None of those guys were top end athletes. David Bell just plays his position very, very well. And he has one elite trait, and that's his body control. I mean, he has some of the most incredible body control, especially when he's in the air, when he's along the sidelines. He just always finds a way to bring the ball in. He produced early as well. So for, you know, any stats or metrics heads out there, you know, he checks that box as well. And he did it on an offense with Rondale Moore. You know, Rondale Moore to get hurt, but, you know, when they were on the field together, Bell was still producing. And Bell's exploding this year. He's looking like he could be the Biletnikoff.
No, I agree. A lot of what you said, I agree with. He's my wide receiver 3. I know Chris Motsley is not going to be thrilled when he hears this, because he always talks about everyone's hyping up David Bell too much. But, you know, I'm going to go wide receiver also here with Garrett Wilson. You know, not a bad consolation prize. I actually have him a little higher than Bell. I think in this, you know, past week after he came back from the injury, he had 3 receiving touchdowns. He had 1 rushing touchdown. He just showed, you know, I think he can do a little bit of everything. I just think since Ohio State is so talented, you know, across the board, we kind of forget how good he really is. And I think, you know, some of the testing, he's going to perform pretty well. And, you know, on the tape, he just is able to get open, I believe, you know, on all 3 levels. And I think he could be a very good receiver, maybe not elite, you know, top end wide receiver 1 like Burks could do with his, you know, size and speed. But I think he could be a very good receiver for very long. And I think he's pretty pro ready and he can jump in right away and produce.
Yeah, absolutely. I think that's what a lot of this class is at the wide receiver position, is it's a lot of guys who are going to be steady, solid producers for your team for a long time. So that's why, you know, I mentioned it before, but I'm looking to trade back out of the top end of the pick draft. And I want picks in the later half of the first tier so I can take guys like Bell and Wilson. I think we are probably both a little bit higher than consensus on Burks. I don't necessarily think Burks gets first round draft capital, and I think that's going to hurt him in the eyes of a lot of people. I don't think that's going to change him too much for my grade or knock him off the top wide receiver spot. But even if it does, there's a lot of other guys there to take the spot. At the 109 here, this is a tough one for me because I know I can get my next wide receiver later. So I'm going to do a little bit of game theory here. I'm going to take running back Kenneth Walker here.
I thought for sure you weren't going to take it. Oh, man. You're killing me, Colin.
Yeah, Kenneth, my first couple picks made you happy, and then my other ones here upset you. You got to pick one. now, Kenneth Walker's had an incredible year this year. He's, you know, in contention for the Heisman. I think he's going to be in New York, you know, when the voting concludes here. I think he's going to be one of the finalists. You know, he looks a lot better than what I expected. You know, he kind of flew under the radar coming from Wake into Michigan State this year. And he's had some massive games, and then he's had some solid games. But one of those massive games was against your Michigan Wolverines there. And that's no slouch of a defense.
Don't remind me.
You know, that's no slouch of a defense. So it's not like he's beating up on some cupcakes. My one question on him is his receiving ability. We don't see it Michigan State doesn't throw the ball to the running backs much. Wake Forest doesn't really throw the ball to the running backs much either. So we didn't really see that from him before that. I don't know if it's a situation of whether he can't do it or he's just not being asked to do it. So that's why he's a little in a tier below Hall and Spiller for me.
Yeah, this is where it gets kind of tough because a lot of these wide receivers are kind of lumped together now. And I've kind of, I guess you could say, soured a little on Carson Strong just based on, I guess I've been listening to Austin too long about, you know, how, you know, that he just doesn't move. And, you know, Chris Motsley made some good points that, you know, if he still could go in the first round, if he goes in the first round, he has that capital, he has a hell of an arm, but he has those knee issues and he just cannot move. That's why there's always those prop bets on him having negative rushing yards. So this is tough, and this might be a little bit of a stretch, but I just really love him. I'm going to take Rashad White here over Kyren Williams. I love his size. I love how he's able to catch the ball out of the backfield. And to be totally honest, that Arizona State offense is him and no one else, because Jane Daniels hasn't really got much going, and you saw that in this past week when he brought them back against Washington. I really like what he can do. And I think if he goes to the right team, he could really be one of those running backs that people overlook. So give me Rashad White.
Man, that's music to my ears. I like Rashad White a lot. Rashad White is my RB12 in Campus to Canton rankings, which is what I have up here. But he is my RB5 in the class. Just behind Kenneth Walker, Kyren Williams, but they are all in that same tier for me. So I love that you're giving Rashad White some love. I'm picking at the 111 here, and this is my last pick. So I'm not going to take this guy, but I just want to highlight him because he's a guy that I think is flying under the radar, and that's George Pickens. If he does come out, George Pickens is another wide receiver that in this class that I think has wide receiver one ceiling. Another size, speed guy. You know, he plays the position angry. I mean, he plays like, you know, he has arrogant hands, like some people like to call it. Goes up, he snatches the ball. And then when he gets it, he looks to hit some people, you know, and I like that. Now he's been very inconsistent in Georgia's offense. He has missed this entire year with an ACL injury. So I don't know if he's going to come out. If he does, he's a guy that I'm looking at in this range. But the guy I'm actually going to take here is Kyren Williams. And you know, you took White there. I don't fault that pick at all. The biggest question I have with Kyren Williams is his size and can he lead an NFL backfield? I don't know if he can, but even if he can't, his pass catching ability, his pass protection ability is going to get him a role in the NFL, I think, for a fairly long time here. And he's also the type of guy who can tote the rock if he needs to. I mean, we're seeing it for Notre Dame this year. So he can handle a college workload. I don't know if he can handle an NFL workload, so that's kind of why he falls a little bit for me. But at the 111 here, I'm going to take the pass catching ability, and you know, assuming it's PPR, I think you're going to be very happy with what you get here.
No, I agree, and I think that was a tough one for me between Kyren and Rashad White. I think Kyren has really shown more power this year running the ball, and you know, he's always been a tough guy. So I could definitely see in the right situation, he probably won't be the main back there, but we've seen NFL is going towards these two back systems, and with his ability to pass protect and, you know, catch the ball in the backfield, that's a great pick. This one is, I'm picking another wide receiver here, and it's not necessarily even the wide receiver I like the most, but I think the NFL will like what he's done this year. I'm going to take Jameson Williams from Alabama, who transferred from Ohio State. I actually personally like Chris Olave better, but my worry is he went back to school. There's, you know, lots of speculation of why he went back to school, but he's played well this year, but I don't think he's really improved his stock. He is who he is. I've said this a lot of places. I think Chris Olave could have a similar career to Robert Woods, you know, the first destination, maybe not meet all the expectations, but end up being a really good receiver, but always be underrated and overlooked, but be a solid receiver that blocks, you know, and does all the intangible types things. But I think Jameson Williams, he shows that speed. He's taken over that spot at Alabama over all those talented freshmen that they brought in at wide receiver. And, you know, like or not, he's going to get that Bama bump. You know, like they love those Bama receivers that show out, you know, during the year. And he's overshadowed Mechie. And, you know, he's passed him. And what I like about Jameis Williams is he has the speed, but he's not just a couple catches for like 100 yards and a touchdown, just deep, you know, plays. He's had games with 10 catches. He catches it short, catches it in between, you know, shows some toughness on his catches. So I really like Jameson Williams there. And so that's why that will be the final pick of our rookie mock draft.
Yeah, I think that one might surprise some people who, you know, may not be doing as deep of a dive into the college class as you know, somebody in a Devy world or in a C2C world. But I think Jameson Williams is a name that's going to rise. He's going to become a hot name here this offseason. Now, you'll hear the stat arguments where he didn't really do anything until his last year. There's, you know, what is his breakout age? But like you said, the NFL is going to love him. And I think he's going to blow up the combine. So, you know, he's probably looking at back end first round draft capital, maybe top end of the second, but it's going to be good draft capital.
And one name, you know, I know that a lot of people are going to be screaming, you know, why he wasn't in this, Drake London at USC. He has played, you know, shown a lot more this year, but I still have concerns about his ability to separate. And just, I think in the Pac-12, they do play a lot of zone out there. And I do wonder if, you know, he can really, you know, beat man-to-man coverage in the NFL. Drake London's going to be one of those players that, you know, if I'm wrong and I'll be kicking myself because I don't think I'll be picking a lot of Drake London where he'll go in drafts. But, you know, that's just my opinion, but, you know, we'll see. He might break all that, like, and have, ascent kind of like Michael Pittman is doing with the Colts this year. So, I just wanted to mention that because I know a lot of people are high on Drake London right now.
Yeah, that's definitely a name to bring up here. I have him as my wide receiver 6 in this class, so I'm not low on him, but I'm not nearly as high as some other people are. I have the same questions you do. I don't know if he has the ability to separate. I don't know if he has the ability to create on his own. He gets schemed open a lot of touches in that USC offense. And I mean, they were peppering him with targets this year, but like I said, a lot of it, I think, was schemed open. I do have some concerns with him as well. And the injury to, you know, when is he going to be able to get back from that? You know, what's his offseason going to look like? I don't think it's anything that's going to hamper him long-term, but this is an important time for him. So it'll be interesting to see how he shakes out this offseason.
Definitely. So obviously this is early and, you know, over at Campus Can, we'll be diving in, you know, after the season on a lot of these rookie players and everything. I just wanted to do kind of, you know, early rookie mock, you know, have Colin on here, talk a little college on what the fantasy. So thank you, Colin, again for joining me. And that Bud Light Lime 12 pack will be in the mail. You know, it might take bottles. A little while to get there. yes, of course it has to be bottles. So thank you, Colin. And you know, everyone that doesn't follow him, please go on Twitter and follow at C2C Decker. You know, he really should be have more followers out there. So thank you for joining. And that's the episode for this week. And we'll hopefully have both hosts back next week, and we'll catch everyone next week.
Thanks for having me on, man.